Cale Bigelow. I work for Purdue University. My responsibilities at Purdue are split between undergraduate teaching, research and extension, with an emphasis on the undergraduate programs and teaching of our church students. So really what I was hoping to accomplish today was to have a conversation. And it's a difficult conversation, but I think all of us need to have an honest conversation and talk a little bit about, you know, where we are in terms of student numbers and what we're potentially going to do maybe in the future, and what the Dr. Pedanti, nice to see you, and what we're going to do down the road to maybe try and change some things up here. So go ahead and get started. TURF student pipeline. All right, these are just some pictures of some of my former TURF students, and you know, there's a lot of things that have been going in my ear in recent years. I've had a lot of our industry professionals coming to me and asking questions such as, how's enrollment? I mean, you see it pretty much any meeting that I go to, whether it's a local meeting or national meeting or regional meeting. How's enrollment? And, you know, a lot of times we say, well, it's pretty good, you know, but a lot of times we don't necessarily tell them exactly what those numbers are either. They're also asking us, I need a fill in the blank, you know, new technician, new spray tech, you know, new person for lawn and landscape company, somebody working in a sports complex, all those other kinds of things. Do you have anybody? And it's like, well, maybe. And then the other one is, do you have any students? You know, it gets to the point of, you know, I'm looking for interns. I'm looking for something. I'm looking for something that I can do in terms of paying somebody a really low wage and making them work 80 hours a week. So, and that's not exactly attractive. But again, what I really wanted to accomplish today is, you know, let's talk about things. Let's have a conversation here at the end after we get some perspective from some folks. This is not so distant past for our program at Purdue. And this was a GCSA conference in New Orleans. And looking there, you probably got about 20 undergrads that we actually took to that competition. This past year, we took two. Okay. And there's lots of reasons for that. Part of it was, you know, some of the students just didn't want to simply go. But again, you know, go from 20 to 2 in about 6 years. Now, the plus side, when I look at this image, though, there are only 3 people in that photo that are graduates of our program that are still not in the industry. They've gone on to other things. So the folks that have gotten their degrees have stayed in the industry. But where are the next Jims, Billys, Susies that are in that image? Okay. This is, with some help of Dr. Throssell in the back of the room, a very, very close approximation to what our numbers have been since the mid-80s. And so Dr. Throssell took over for Dr. Daniel back in the mid-80s, and, you know, as we discussed some things, he said he had slightly under 20 students in the program at that time. Then we had this big spike, you know, when I arrived after he departed, and we were right around 80 students. And this has been the trend. These are very, very close numbers in recent years. So we've got, you know, about 80, 85 students here at the time, and this is important. At the time, we offered both a bachelor's degree and an associate's degree at Purdue. Now, over time, that has actually changed. So right now, as of last week, we have about 25 students. And so the question is, you go from here with a fire hose down here to the trickle in terms of number of students, what's changed? What's your perspective here? Well, bottom line is, it's complicated. There's a lot of stuff that's happened in the last 25 years. But let's sort of start with a little bit of perspective, okay? So 1980, Caddyshack comes out, okay? And you guys laugh and giggle about it, but it probably had a little bit of an influence on our industry, okay? At that time, country clubs were different. Maybe it was thought to be cool to be a greenkeeper, you know, a pool or a pond. A pond would be good for you, right? But again, you know, you start to see some of those kinds of things, and you saw this uptick in the enrollment and programs. Then we had this announcement by the National Golf Foundation, right? We had this golf boom, and basically they were saying, in order to keep up with baby boomer retirements, we're going to have to construct a golf course a day. And so during this period, we went from 1990, 12,846 golf courses to 16,052 golf courses from 1990 to 2005. That's a lot of golf courses. All of us know that. We even had some of our graduates involved in this. One of our graduates, Mr. Lee Schmidt there, he and his partner, which were based out of this part of Arizona, they were involved in a lot of development. Okay, and one of the things that they actually were involved in was a place called Mission Hills. 10 golf courses all in at once in China. 5 golf courses in 14 months built in China. Okay. boom also meant potentially we needed more turf managers. We also needed more qualified graduates, which meant there potentially were opportunities. Families, students started to see, hey, maybe there's a career in this, and so they came. We also had this happen, 1996. Tiger Woods became pro, went on tour. And if you read all the publications and things, we were going to have this Tiger boom, right? He was going to go out, he was going to reach a lot of different demographics that were reached in the past, and then perhaps we would start to have even more golf courses and lots more golfers, and everything else was just going to be peachy, right? So again, I'm just not telling you things you don't already know. Then we had a couple of, September 11, 2001, obviously we're all pretty familiar with that date, but it did affect the financial markets. It did give some people some different perspectives on what was important. And you started to see some of the country clubs and some of the clubs starting to see people shedding their memberships. And then we had 2008, October, big meltdown, right? Real estate market goes upside down. All these potential, residential golf types of models starting to struggle in terms of, financially. And places starting to shut doors and banknotes getting called, everything else. Now, we can blame it a little bit on this, and we can blame it a little bit on this and economics, but we also had pretty strong, for those of us that are in the room that have been around long enough, it was a pretty big deal in 1987 too. I mean, that Black Monday, where they had to halt all the trading on Dow Jones and everything stopped. But what happened after that? Everything went this way for the golf market. So I'm not blaming it all on the economy, but there was somewhat of a cultural shift, and the economy was certainly a big part of this. The other thing that happened right after that economic downturn was we started to see those of us in administration and those of us talking to our administrators and the universities, is universities' business models, if you will, were starting to change. Okay? We're starting to get a lot of fixation with the universities on things like these rankings and this idea of bringing in superior academic profiles, elevating that entry-level GPA, elevating all those test scores, all the other kinds of things that were happening. We're starting to look for these elite students. Okay, in Purdue, land-grant university and state of Indiana, no different, looking for those elite students. The other thing we started to see is that as people had less money, people started to question the cost of tuition. And that still is a very, very common thing that's happening today. We also saw some administrators really starting to focus on metrics, starting to focus on how these metrics relate to the rankings, starting to talk about, well, how many people do you have in all these different classes? And again, our campus, we have about 40,000 people on the campus. And the College of Agriculture, out of that 40,000, is about 2,600 students. Okay, but they're trying to apply a one-size-fits-all metric to everything on campus. And I think that Eric's going to talk a little bit about some of those things. The other thing that's happened, if you have kids or have had kids in recent years and think about what your own childhood might have been like if you grew up in the 80s and 90s, it is really different. The kids today are very different. They're special. Right? They're elite, right? How many elite programs do we have? Baseball, softball, volleyball, swimming, cross country, pick it. Okay? These kids are really, really programmed by their parents because they've been told by these universities, if you want to get into Purdue, you better be elite in something. Or Iowa State, you better be elite in something. The Harvard or the Midwest, right, David? They're also elite outside of athletics. And we see these kids getting involved in a lot of other things, not just sports. We've got an art, and again, I'm supposedly the West Lafayette High School. It's the third smartest school in the state of Indiana. My kids go there. I'm sure that they bring the curve down a little bit. But the point being, we've got mathletes at Westside High School. Okay, we've got folks that are playing around in robotics clubs. We've got folks that are doing debate, drama, all these other kinds of things. And you start to think about, are there opportunities for some of these students to possibly be part of our industry? I mean, I immediately look at these robotics folks and you start thinking of all the mechanized types of things that we have in our industry and where that eventually might go. And, could we offer something to those folks? Are we touching those folks? So again, we start thinking about these things. We start to get into this academic profile, the university focusing its mission. We abandoned, IU and Purdue both abandoned their associate's degree programs in 2011, awarded their last ones. Now, turf and ag was not a big component of that. Probably the biggest thing on our campus was actually aviation technology, all right? But IU and Purdue, the folks got together and said, this is not what we're about anymore. So that associate's degree opportunity suddenly disappeared. And what we had in terms of our program was a fair number of folks that actually were returning degree folks coming to the turf industry. And you probably see the same kinds of things. We also have the best students now, right? This is actually from our news, local newspaper this past year. Record enrollment at Purdue, bursting at the seams, all right? We've got 450 undergraduate students. That's 1,042 more than last year. Incoming freshman class at 7,243. Although Purdue has cast a wider net in recent years, its incoming class reportedly is the most academically prepared, remember they're all elite, prepared in the university history, a mean ACT score of 27.9, GPA of 3.74, SAT scores remain the same. Graduation and retention rates, all these metrics, very, very important to administrators now. Because it costs a lot to go. God forbid you graduate in more than 8 semesters. You know, they're going to come back to the advisors and, how did you let that happen? So these are the kinds of things that we're dealing with. But you come back to this. We had more students on campus, but you see an uptick in turf students? No. And we're not alone in our college. Our biggest sort of, you know, benchmarks in the college are animal science and ag econ. The other thing that's starting to happen, and I'm sure this will be discussed a little bit, lower enrollment, fewer butts and seats, administrative scrutiny, what's the value of some of the courses that we're teaching, what's the value of the programs that we have. This is actually from our faculty senate this past year in March. A uniform minimum class size policy infringes upon the autonomy of the colleges and ignores their individual objectives and blah, 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 blah. Pushback from the university faculty that, hey, this one size fits all that you need. Pick a number, 15, 10, 12 in a class in order to offer it. Faculty at my institution aren't happy with this. So we're trying to work through the policy and figure out what is going to be appropriate. Again, we're a college of 2,700 students, college engineering, 10,000 students. Those numbers are probably going to be a little bit different. So we get back to this. It's complicated what's happening with all of our students, right? It's really complicated, and there's lots of reasons why we have lower enrollment. But the bottom line, the reason that I asked to have this together, is we got to talk about this. I mean, I can do some things, Eric can do some things, Mike can do some things, Dave can do some things, everyone else in here that has some sort of undergraduate program, we can do things individually, or maybe we can start to get our heads together and try and figure out, you know, what can we do as far as a larger group, because we're all going after the same folks. It's just really a matter of whether or not they're going to be able to pay for the tuition at your university sometimes, right? I mean, we've got to do something if we want this thing to work. So, like I said, it's a national issue. We've got these millennials. Do they even like golf? Okay? I say yes. They like being outside. They like doing stuff. And these are actually my kids, all right? And this is pretty classic of that 15, 16-year-old kid. You know, here's my daughter slapping balls over at Topgolf. And what's her brother doing? You know, he's texting a buddy or Snapchatting or some other kind of thing like that. So there's ways that maybe we can connect that we're not really thinking about. And they do like golf, but enough to actually want to work that hard. You know, here again, you know, these are folks, these kids that are elite, they like science, they like being outdoors, they like social responsibility. I mean, you can go through a whole profile of what millennials want or don't want, but they are interested. Just don't make them work more than 40 hours a week, okay? So again, today is really intended to be a dialogue. You know, as we go along, have some questions and start talking about some things. I asked several of my colleagues that I knew would have at least a little bit of interest in this to sort of present some things. Dr. Irvin, interim department head at Virginia Tech, and has also moved over from the dean's office at Virginia Tech in academic programs, talk about what's happening at their institution. We've got a number of folks that are at smaller campuses, and these number of things are definitely going to affect them. I asked Dr. Fidanza to reach out to a few colleagues at smaller institutions to see how that's going to come into play. Brandon and the folks at Tennessee have done a really nice job in terms of recruiting, and so I asked Brandon to come and share kind of what they've done and see if there's things that maybe we can collaborate on and build on and do things in a broader way. And then also, you know, Dave Gardner, he does everything. He's like a utility belt. I mean, you give him a book and he can teach it. But I think we also need to be thinking about how can we teach some classes beyond our traditional turf things to get the butts in the seats. You know, Lawns in America, I know, is taught partially at the University of Minnesota. So those kinds of things are things that we need to be talking about. And then we'll sort of wrap up with, you know, what the heck can we do? But this is real, folks. I mean, this is something we better be paying attention to.